Hi, I'm Tony Smith, head coach of the Warrington Wolves. This is the Rugby League World Cup final hooter on loverugbyleague.com and Radio General.
Yes, indeed it is. Welcome to another Rugby League World Cup final hooter. My name's Adrian Jackson. As always, I'm joined by David Parkinson. And from the Widnes Vikings, we're joined by Hep Cahill. Hep, welcome to the World Cup final hooter.
Oh yeah, how good's it been watching all these games, eh?
It's been amazing, hasn't it? 2 weeks of Rugby League gone, and it's still exciting everybody, isn't it?
It's bubbling over, isn't it? I mean, certainly we've had the pleasure of going to some of the perhaps smaller grounds in rugby league, and ones where they've not perhaps got the big matches, or they've not got a history of big matches, and they've been absolutely huge. I mean, Leeton and a half thousand, Rochdale nearly 9,000, 14,000 at St Helens. The crowds just keep growing and growing. This World Cup is far and away. It feels like 95 again, but it's far and away much, much better than 2000, that's for sure.
Certainly is as well, and also what's making it really exciting and selling the seats as well is the competitive games of Rugby League we're seeing, although in week two we have seen one or two blowouts.
We have, but I think that was always inevitable when you sort of see some of the Rugby League superpowers coming up against the lesser nations. But generally when teams have been pretty evenly matched, we've seen some top class games, and I mean this week was no exception to that, was it?
Certainly was. And Hep, you were at the game between forgot the game.
Which game was you at, Hep?
I was only there last night, wasn't I?
Cook Islands and
Tonga.
Big, good physical game, that one. Was. I thought the Cook Islanders played well. It was good to have another close match there, but Tonga were pretty lucky to come away with the win. It could have been a draw there easily if the ball was held on at the end, eh?
See, the games are coming that thick and fast, I'm forgetting where it was.
Well, you never really had a clue where you were anyway, did you? You know, no. To be fair, we've been doing this all the way through the season, and every time we've had to check the Google Maps just to make sure we are where we're supposed to be.
As always, got plenty of reaction from the games that took place this weekend. We're going to hear from Brett Kite from Tonga, Joe Parlow from the USA, and in Coach's Corner, it's an all-Australian affair. Tim Sheens, Terry Matteson and David Furley.
And they've all got something interesting to say. I mean, you know, we've seen a classic week, really, of some really top-class defence from some of those boys. And, you know, I just think that this is getting better and better.
Certainly is. And certainly those coaches as well. Great players in the past, weren't they?
Yeah, I'm thinking Terry Matteson was always a favourite of mine, because when we first got Sky TV at home or other types of cable, etc., can be mentioned in there. The Winfield Cup was always on, and Terry was at the time playing for Brisbane Broncos and having a stormer, so he's like a link to my childhood in a way.
Do you remember Terry Matteson playing?
No, I grew up in New Zealand, so everything was about All Blacks for me.
Ah, right, the dark side of rugby then.
Yep.
So, David, you've got the results from week two.
Yeah, here's the results. We've got Cook Islands 20, America 32, France 0, New Zealand 48, England 42, Ireland 0, Australia 34, Fiji 2, Wales 16, America 24, Scotland 30, Italy 30, Papua New Guinea 4, Samoa 38, and Tonga 22, Cook Islands 16.
Sadly for France, they might have got a sellout crowd in Avignon, but unfortunately New Zealand too good for them on the night.
I thought in that game though, certainly in the first half, they really did threaten New Zealand, and New Zealand at the time had to be at the best to sort of keep them out, because as we all know, that pack, which was virtually a Catalan Dragons pack, wasn't it, took them on, and they're always hard to get over the top of. But I suppose in the end, New Zealand, their experience and greater flair in attack told out, didn't it, really, Hep?
Yeah, I didn't really get to see too much of the game, a bit of the highlights, but yeah, that's right, it's good New Zealand come away with the win. They need to start building for the finals and that, but I think the results, to be fair, really, France put up a good fight.
It saw Sean Johnson in particular have a great game. He's had a top season with New Zealand Warriors, and he's just sort of coming through. He's only about 21, 22, a really young player who really is starting to push through now. Two tries, 8 goals from him. But for me, I thought it was Isaac Luke who controlled things. He was really darting from dummy half and creating loads of problems for France defence.
Certainly was, wasn't he? Showing what a great player he is as well, isn't he?
He is, yeah, yeah. Very consistent over his first two performances in the World Cup, and certainly that's where a lot of the coaching staffs are after at the moment. They're allowing perhaps almost a bit of a dodgy start to the World Cup, but now it's business and business heads on, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it. For Sean Johnson too, I think he's going to just keep growing. He's been in Benji Marshall's shadow for a while, and now that he's gone and dusted, I think Sean Johnson can start shining and putting his own stamp on the game.
Certainly England against Ireland, they were looking for a good performance, and Steve McManara very happy by what he's seen.
Yeah, I think he'd probably be happier with the nil that's on the board there, and the fact that in the first, 30 minutes they were irresistible, to be honest, were England. I think it was Ryan Hall who ended up with a hat-trick, some top-class finishing from him, some top-class back play, to be honest, and although scoring slowed in the second half, do we put that down to a greater effort from Ireland and probably a rocket that was sent up towards them by Mark Aston, or are we doing them a bit of a disservice there?
I just thought England had the game done and dusted, and were probably guilty of taking the foot off the pedal, but to be honest, conditions wise it wasn't the best in the second half in Huddersfield.
No, it was probably one of those. Well, to be fair, I think with most of the games that we've seen, conditions haven't been the best. It's getting to typical late October, early November weather, isn't it? So, you know, this time of year, it's wet, it's miserable, you've usually got a driving wind heading your way as well, and it just makes things really difficult for everybody concerned. So the fact that we have seen you know, the sides put the points on that they have done in this World Cup is probably testament to the skill level of the players involved.
How do you think England have gone so far in the tournament, Hep?
Well, watching the last game, that first 30 minutes, there was nothing there that Ireland could do. They were that good. All the players were very sharp and everyone hitting the right holes, and they'll be very hard to stop if they could keep that through 80 minutes. But I watched the first game against Australia too. I think it was a pretty close game. It was a tough one, but I think they'll come right now, having that good win against Ireland and knowing what they could put through that first half performance, they'll go a long way.
Certainly they'll be looking to get the job from them against Fiji, won't they?
Yeah, I think they're going to have to be on the guard against Fiji though, because they've certainly shown against Ireland that they can put points on, and I thought that they came up with a superb defensive effort to deny a top class Australian side up over there in the wet at St Helens. I've been really impressed with Fiji, actually. I think that Petro Sivinaseva has been leading the way, as we always knew that he would do. Certainly in the first 20 minutes of that particular game, it was like he was the Australian forwards were in awe of him, because they just kept putting so many numbers on him to try and stop his go forward, and he was still managing to make, you know, oodles of ground, shall we say. It'll be tough, you know, we mustn't write off Fiji after all, because they've got a really exciting bat three in Uatu. They've got one of the best finishers in the World Rugby League, and I just think that they've been, I dare say, a surprise package. You know, I don't know whether that's a fair reflection on them, to be honest, because there's a lot of NRL experience in their squad these days, but they've certainly impressed me over the course of this World Cup so far.
What impressed me about the whole game is the fact that they went and spent 80 minutes knocking 10 bells out of each other, and they get in a huddle at the end of the game and kind of both teams have a bit of a praying session at the end of it.
It shows a lot of brotherhood, doesn't it? And at the end of the day, everybody's united, aren't they? You know, they're representing their countries, and yeah, for, you know, 80 minutes they're going to knock 7 bells out of each other, but at the end of it they can all get together. They know that they're pushing the rugby league gospel further on in the world, and I just think that, you know, the brotherhood and togetherness that all these nations have shown, it wasn't just in that game, Australia and Fiji, we saw it with the Fijians in the earlier game against Ireland. We've seen it with the Pacific nations as well. You know, the likes of Tonga have been very keen to, you know, get out there and mix with everybody afterwards. And that is, for me, what is making this World Cup a success.
You're from that area, Hep. Is that how it is? It's all about spreading the brotherly love?
Oh, yeah, definitely not on the field, but once you're off the field, everyone's real tired. And I think a lot of that would have come from Petro as well. I think a lot of the Aussie players still look up to him as a player and as a person, and it's good for what he's doing for the game, coming back and playing for Fiji.
Certainly a worry, and at 37 years of age, okay, he took a backward step this year by playing in the Queensland Cup in Australia, but to put his boots on at the highest level, an international standard, it is some going.
It is some going. I don't know whether we can actually accuse the Queensland Cup of being a step backwards either, because it's probably of comparable level to our Super League over here, even all respect. But I do think that, you know, he's been a fantastic ambassador for Rugby League, and, you know, long may it continue. I know that he's spoken about, you know, hanging the boots up, but here's a personal begging letter to you, so Petro, don't hang them up yet, because you've always been a favourite player of mine.
Dave alluded to the Queensland Cup competition. What kind of standard of Rugby League is it out there, Hep?
Oh, now, having all the TV coverage and that they've got over there, the under-20s coverage and that, the second division from first grade, if you're too old for under-20s, is just full of all players that have played NRL now, so the standard is just almost as high as Super League, so I think that's why NRL is so strong.
Well, we saw an example of it as well, didn't we, with the Cook Islands, because their winger who scored all their points yesterday, he has played all season for the Newtown Jets, so that's just the calibre of player that they're bringing through. And like you said, it's very competitive up in the NRL, isn't it? And, you know, to get a shot. But, you know, we've seen various players who have impressed coming up from that level in this World Cup so far.
Plenty of tries scoring. Unfortunately, the man who got a hat trick, Mr.
Taripo, wasn't it?
I wanted you to say that rather than me. He gets a hatchet, but sadly ended up on the wrong side of the scoreline. You can edit that bit out as well. And unfortunately for the Cook Islands, it was the end of the road off the back of that defeat at the hands of Tonga.
Yeah, I think they paid the price for probably a little bit of a slow start against America, to be fair. I think that they've got a lot to offer of the Cook Islands. I remember having a conversation with someone a few years ago, and do you remember Kevin and Tony Iroh played over here with some distinction?
Certainly Kevin did. I vaguely remember him, yeah.
Certainly Kevin did, for Leeds and for Wigan. Well, apparently there's a phone book of Iroh's, so that just tells you all you need to know about the Cook Islands. You know, fantastic.
You were at the game last night as well. Hep, how did you feel it went?
Oh, I was just loving watching the big hits and the big hard runs. You see, some of those boys are massive. You know, Fui Fui Moi Moi and some of those other big boys. It's a good game to go watch.
Play it rough and tough, don't they?
And in Fui's case, he rolled back the clock as well, because, I mean, he's, you know, perhaps not as young as he used to be.
Yeah, definitely. He's still running hard, though.
So overall, a good overall performance from Tonga, but Cook Islands very nearly snatched a draw, which would have kept their hopes alive slightly.
Oh, I feel really sorry for Mr. Apana, who ended up knocking on in the corner. It seemed like it was going to be easier for him to score than not to, but you know, sometimes these things conspire against you, don't you? I mean, we've all seen games where players have looked set to score and then it's not happened, but you can't really pin it on just that one thing. Ultimately, the Cooks were probably undone with the amount of petrol that they had to do in defence early doors for me.
Tremendous game over in Workington as Scotland and Italy played out the draw, and Italy showing that they could be the surprise package of this tournament.
Yeah, I mean, we've spoken about Italy before, haven't we, over the last couple of weeks, and I've been really impressed with the job that Carlo Napolitano is doing with Italy. I think that certainly with the likes of Anthony Minicello in the squad, Chris Centroni also got on the scoreboard there, and for me, Ray Nasso, I know he was an Australian schoolboys player about 6 or 7 years ago now, but you know, he stepped into that role for Italy. He's controlling the middle, and I've been impressed with Parata as well, who's from Parramatta. I think that he's had a tremendous tournament so far. So you're right, but I think we've got to give a lot of credit to the Scots on this occasion, because everybody was talking about Italy pre-game. We've seen the way that Italy's gone about the business over the last couple of weeks. The Scots, remember, they downed Tonga last week in an almighty game. I still don't know how they managed to win it, to be honest, because Tonga ended up with the ball for about 5 minutes more in the game, so that was just an unbelievable effort, you know. So for the likes of Danny Brough and Peter Wallace to guide that side around an unfancied side and manage to get a draw, and the way they managed it as well, Ben Halliwell, of course, done time with Warrington in the reserves at one point, came up with two tries. The second one was an absolute corker to draw the game, so, you know, job done, and move on. But it's been great to see full stadia up there in Cumbria. It just shows that there's still a real appetite for the game.
Mentioned Sini Yasiva being a legend within the game of Australia, playing out his time for Fiji, but what about Anthony Minicello for Italy? He just seemed to roll back the clock, doesn't he?
he is, he's class. I mean, he was once the world's best player. I don't think he's ever dropped his standards. I think he's still up there as one of the world's best players. I think, it's been such a huge boost for the tournament to have a player of that magnitude and of that standard put his hand up and play for, you know, a team or a country of his heritage. You know, this is where we get credibility from, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I spent a few years at the Roosters with him, and he's just like an evergreen. He's just always there. He had lots of back problem when I was there, but how hard he trains, and I think he's always going to be a world-class player no matter what age he plays to.
So he's like an inspiration to, for yourself, but also to a lot of other people as well, isn't
he? Yeah, definitely. Just he doesn't need to speak to inspire people. Just he inspires by what he does and off the field and on the field.
Two teams that have disappointed me so far in this World Cup has been Wales and Papua New Guinea, and they were both beaten by the USA and Samoa.
Yeah, if I can start with that Samoan game, because I thought the first half in that one, they were unplayable. Joseph Lelua in the centres, I thought he was excellent. It was like watching Mal Meninga reincarnated. He was just bouncing through the tackles, little offloads coming in. It was wonderful to see. We ended up with Antonio Winterstein scoring a hat-trick in that game, but the job was done at half-time. 28 points to nil. Papua New Guinea didn't help themselves because I think they dropped the ball with the very first carry of the game, which put them under pressure. And before they could blink, they were 12-0 down. And basically, Samoa just, you know, steamrolled the way through, and they have always got that ability to do that, of the Samoans. We saw it last week when they played against New Zealand, where they were given just a sniff in the game and came roaring back. So, you know, they're a very dangerous side, this Samoan outfit, and, you know, in Anthony Milford, I think they've got one of the world's most exciting players at the moment, and the fact that he's only 19 just points that he could be around on the international stage for years and years and years.
That is what you call a frightening thought.
Definitely, yeah. I think one of the plus points for Papua New Guinea was probably the performance of Jesse Joan-Andai, who's spent time over here with Featherstone and Whitehaven as well. I think he's going back there next season. He worked really hard, worked his socks off, and to be honest, didn't deserve to be on the losing side with the effort that he put in. But to be honest, when you're losing 28-0 at half-time, it's virtually impossible to turn that round into a victory at the end.
We mentioned how good that Samoa have been. How do you feel they've gone?
Yeah, no, I think what the pool that they've been in, and they've had the tough game against New Zealand, and they come back in the second half strong, is pretty much shows how good they can be, and I think they're going to go a long way in the comp too, so no one can underestimate anyone from the results that we've seen. So if you hold on to the ball, like Papua New Guinea, they couldn't hold it the first half and they just threw away too many points, so they were never really in it, but I think everyone knows that now. No one's going to underestimate anyone, and anyone could win.
I'm saying that I'm disappointed by how Wales have played during the first two games, first game against Italy and the USA, but the USA were excellent.
Oh yeah, they were. I mean, just to touch on that Welsh effort though, they started the game pretty well, and to be honest, looked like they were going to make some real inroads. I know certainly the pack was led by the likes of Ben Flower, and they got some good go forward off the bench as well, but that was where it ended, to be honest. They scored a really attractive try and then basically kept it too much in the middle for my liking. They didn't spread it out to the centres, which they looked like if they could get round the defence, they could cause problems. Now, I don't know whether that's a half-back problem, whether they were just playing to order or anything like that, but I was really disappointed with the way that Wales played. They didn't, create as much doubt in the defence, and as well as, you know, America did play, and that USA pack at times over these past two games has been awesome. Eddie Pettibone, what a player he's going to be for Wigan next season. He just gets stuck in, he's all action, no thoughts of self-preservation there, and it's just, you know, very disappointing from a Welsh point of view, but from an American point of view, this is why we watch rugby league. This is, we like the underdog, especially over here in the UK. We love the underdog, and the fact that they have been able to come up with two top class performances led by that man Joey Paolo, it's been great for them.
Certainly has, on it, and bearing in mind, USA didn't even think they'd get this far. They bought themselves to go home even before the quarterfinals had started.
Yeah, I think there's a few travel plans being altered as we speak, to be honest. And probably if you're listening to this in a couple of days' time, they're probably still trying to alter them as well.
Yeah, without a doubt. We mentioned Eddie Pettibone, Hep, you're going to be lining up against him. How do you feel he's gone, and are you looking forward to taking him on in Super League next year?
Yeah, I've played against him a few times. He definitely doesn't care about his own body. He's just one of those tough players that will get up, if you smash him he'll look at you again and run straight back at you, so I think he's a good signing for Wigan, and it's good for Super League, so I look forward to it.
And it's been good for the rugby league that the USA are flying the flag for the underdog, aren't they?
Oh, definitely. I take my hat off to them. They've had the tag of being the underdog, and they've just been going into every game with no pressure, so they could just go out and do what they've done. And I don't think they've tried anything too fancy or anything like that. They've just stuck to their game plan and come away with some good wins.
You mentioned the tricky half-back, Joe Paolo. Dave, let's hear from him.
Yeah, I just thought the boys really dug deep. Obviously, it was a big advantage to Wales to play in front of that big crowd. But to our boys who defended our line for so long, obviously we landed those two tries at the end, but couldn't be any prouder of the boys. When we're talking about the spirit of the team, we talk about the Tomahawk spirit, and you get to see the boys stepping up every time we look like we're in trouble or any time that they look like a threat on the edges. But yeah, just really proud of the boys, and looking forward to next week's game.
There you have it. That's a very brief interview with Joe Paolo. He mentioned the Tomahawk spirit.
Yeah, I was wondering whether that was a drink, actually, first of all, when he mentioned it. But no, it's just basically what Terry Matteson has instilled in his side. I think he's given them a bit of belief. Like Het was saying, he's kept it fairly simple for them. I think he's still getting to know some of the names. So, you know, that puts me and you to shame even at this point, Adrian. But I just think he's doing a top job there. And when you bear in mind that the build-up to this World Cup that the USA have had, they've got two rival competitions going on over there. They've had three head coaches in the last 3 months. The fact that they've won two World Cup matches on the bounce and beat what was on paper a good looking French side in a warm up, it's no fluke, is it?
No, not at all. Terry Matteson coming into the job late on as well, so it shows you just how quickly he's galvanised the American team.
Definitely, yeah. I think, like I say, he's done some really tremendous work, and it's nice to see your next coach in Super League doing so well on the world stage.
Now, Tonga lost out to Scotland by 2 points in the first round of the Rugby League World Cup. Now, they were looking to bounce back to winning ways, and they did do that, and they were led by the inspirational Brent Kite. Let's get his thoughts on the big win against the Cook Islands in Lee. Start that again, shall we? Technical hitch on the computer. Let's go again, Tawi. Brent Kite, take two.
Yeah, I'm pretty impressed with the, the competition so far. I think, everyone, especially in these emerging pools, seems to be able to beat anyone else on their given day. And teams are certainly turning up with plenty of national pride. And the Cookie Boys give us a good run there tonight, and give us a few bruises to take away as well. You know, I've got ambitions to see the World Cup grow, and I think we have to have a good showing, us, the emerging nations. And as I mentioned before, it's I've got a real surprise of some of the quality. Scotland, obviously knocked us off, and the Cook Islands give us a good run. I think it's just been well supported up here in the north, and credit to the organisers. They're packing out the little stadiums. There's good atmosphere, and there's good results to go along with it. So I think that's good for the international game. And as I said, hopefully we can Tonga can have continued success, and start by trying to get one more win, and fingers crossed we might go through. And there's a heavy influence in the NRL of Polynesian based players, and I think we have to recognise that and have fixtures like the April Test, Tonga versus Samoa, and that can only help to grow the game internationally. So a few more fixtures like that would probably be good. I thought Georgia's try was stayed true to the previous rulings. It looked that he had a good play at that, and they've sort of been going with the benefit. I think that one was just in line with the other rulings, but definitely a bit of luck there with the big fella dropping it across the line, and you got to take that. We've got done by Scotland by 2 points, and that might mean our World Cup campaign. So it's so close, especially at this with these little emerging nations.
There is a great warrior, Brent Kite, and he's been around the world of rugby league for a while in Australia, hasn't he? It's interesting to hear him say that more international games for the likes of Tonga and the emerging nations would improve the standard of the international game within rugby league.
I would agree with him, to be honest, because I think then you'd be less inclined, just from a point of view as where we get this almost merry-go-round every time we get to a World Cup with players deciding which country they're going to represent. I think if there was more international rugby league, then they'd be more inclined to stick with that country, wouldn't they?
Yeah, I think this World Cup, the quality of the games is definitely going to help that go forward too. You see games like USA games, you can go there and have a good time as watching New Zealand versus Australia. It's been some good games.
Now, as always in the Rugby League World Cup, everyone likes to stick their team of the week together. And we've got two. We've got the official one, which we're going to give you. And Dave Parkinson's got his very own team of the week.
Yeah, I'll give you the official one first
okay,
of all.
Okay, go on then.
It's Anthony Milford at fullback for Samoa. Wingers of Tom Briscoe and Chris Taripo. Centres Callum Watkins and Leroy Cudjoe. Halfbacks Rangi Chase and Sean Johnson. Front row of Luke Douglas, Isaac Luke and Fui Fui Moi Moi. A back row of Danny Addy, Jesse Joe Nyandai and Ben Flower.
Some interesting names in that lineup.
Yeah, I think they've been a bit biased towards England, surely, yeah, there. You know, I thought there's been some better performances than the England boys put in, but perhaps the stats don't show that.
Exactly, it's all about how the stats man see it.
There'll be somebody there with the ledger, won't they? Just sort of clocking up how many metres they're making, or runs from dummy half and all these sort of stuff. I mean, you'll be aware of this type of stuff, won't you, Harper?
Oh, yeah, they get it out every week. But I think you'll see as a tournament goes on, the bigger players will start coming up on the team sheets. I think they're getting rotated a bit at the moment, so they're not on there as much.
That's the official team of the week, and this is Dave Parkinson's team of the week.
Yeah, I've not really gone for you know, the players that would be perhaps household names here in the UK, but I've got Anthony Milford at fullback, so I've agreed there. Antonio Winterstein and Chris Taripo are the wingers. Conrad Hurrell and Christian Ruetz in the centres. Halfbacks Joey Paolo and Craig Priestley, our famous American duo there. Front row of Brett White, Tui Sega Sega Samoa and Mark Offerdal. A back row of Jesse Joenandai, Clint Newton and Corbin Sims of Fiji.
That's a cracking team. I think your team is just about the best in the official team of the week.
Oh, you reckon? Oh,
yeah, I'm not being biased.
I'm glad that you think I know my stuff. I'm going to ask Hep here, but he'll probably disagree with me, you know, because he knows more about rugby league than either of us do.
No, it'd be a good game to watch, though.
Oh, imagine if them two teams went head-to-head. Who'd win that one?
It would be fantastic. Anthony Milford would pop up on both sides and still end up running round and beating 10 players aside.
It will be, won't it? But, yeah, it's good to see you go for not the so-called super stars of the Rugby League World Cup.
No, but I do think that we've had some really good performances, to be honest, from the other nations, and that has to be taken into account. And like Brent was saying, if they can get something together where we get more international rugby league, it's for the betterment of it, rugby league all round, isn't it?
Now, one thing you can clarify and clear up for everybody concerned, Antonio Winterstein, is he Frank Winterstein's brother?
No, he's his little cousin.
See, everyone keeps saying, is that Frank Winterstein's brother? I'm going, I don't know.
Yeah, it's been a question that's been going up and down press boxes for most of this World Cup so far, Hep, so thanks for clearing that up, and we'll sound like we know what we're talking about next time we're asked.
Oh, that's good. It's spread pretty fast, eh?
This is Chris Hill. This is the Rugby League World Cup final, which are on loverugbyleague.com and Radio General.
Good to see still Chris Hill standing out like a true pro for England on the international scene.
Yeah, he had a great game, actually. In fact, he could have been one of in the team of the week, to be honest, with the yards that he made. Yeah, he's done really well since stepping up from the Championship, and we can, you know, seriously call him a top-class Super League pro now, can't we?
Oh, definitely, and the stuff that you see him doing off the ball and that you don't really see as a spectator, but as a player, all the little things that he does too, is he's always doing that extra work for his team that's not just helping him but helping the guys next to him.
Now, we've been talking about week two. Some good fixtures coming up for week three.
Yeah, there is some fine fixtures coming up for week three, to be honest.
You've not got them set off, have you?
But looking at it, I think I'm looking forward to Tonga and Italy, to be honest. That's going to be on Sunday at Halifax. I think that's going to be a tremendous game. The Wales and Cook Islands one is a little bit of a dead rubber one at the moment, but I think plenty of national pride at stake there. And then, of course, we've got England against Fiji and Ireland going across. Australia, which you know, could be a cricket score, but the Irish have pride in the performance, so you never know there.
I'm intrigued with the Ireland-Australia game. We've talked about attendances around the grounds of the Rugby League World Cup. what kind of attendance can we expect in Limerick?
I'm not sure. I think last time they went there, they got about 3,000 for a fixture there. So I think anything above 3,000 they'll be quite happy with. I know that generally the Rugby League have been made up with the attendances so far. The only one that disappointed was the opening day's fixture. But I think, bearing in mind that they only budgeted for 10,000 turning up at St Helens, 14,000 turned up. They only budgeted for 6,000 at Leigh, 10,000 turn up. You know, so if you look at it on those two games alone, they're ahead of where they thought they'd be, which you know, is a far cry, like I said at the top of the show, from 2000 when it was all a bit of a damp squib, to be fair.
Right, let's just give you the standings before we go into the fixtures of week three. In Group A, Australia lead the way. They've got 4 points from their two games. Second place at England, they have one victory from the two games played so far, also alongside Fiji, who are just behind England on points difference, to be honest. Ireland, it's fair to say they are going to be eliminated unless they pull off a shock against Ireland, against Australia, which I can't see, to be honest. In Group B, it's New Zealand who lead the way, with Samoa and France level on 2 points. Papua New Guinea sadly eliminated. In Group C, it's a tie between Italy and Scotland, both on 3 points, but Tonga not far behind either. They're on 2 points, so everything to play for going into week three in Group C. And Group D, it's the USA leading the way. They've got all 4 points on the board that they've had to win. And it looks like they're going to qualify from Group D, because there's no way free for Cook Islands or Wales.
Yeah, I think as far as America are concerned, they've probably got the tie that nobody else wants against Australia in the providing, you know, Australia get the job done against Ireland, which we've both already ruled out an Ireland win there, haven't we, by all accounts. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see just how they're going to compete against the Aussies.
Certainly will be a big test for them. As for England versus Fiji, we'd expect England to beat Fiji on Saturday, surely.
You would do, especially with the partisan home crowd over there at Hull. But, you know, stranger things have happened. I've already said about the Fijian flair that we've seen so far, the experience amongst their back line, and the fact that they have got players who can certainly shift it given an opening. I'm just hoping that it's going to be a bit of a dry track, because I think we'll see a top class game if it's a dry track over there at Hull. What do you reckon it?
Oh, yeah, I'm definitely with you all the way. If it's dry, I think it's going to be a good game to watch. The wet game, I think England will pull away with it. But Fiji like to throw the ball around and make it a bit exciting, so it'll be a good game.
It'd be a shock if England don't qualify from second place. If they do finish in second place, it means they play third place in Group B, which is going to be either Samoa or France.
Yeah, and those two are playing off, aren't they? So, again, there's things to play for in this last week of the pool matches, isn't there, before we head off and start looking at the quarterfinals. So, yeah, I think that we're in for a treat.
It looks like Italy are going to get the job done, unless Scotland can do something themselves against them. But whoever wins Group C, they've got New Zealand.
Ooh, it's tough, that. It's tough, that. Especially with that New Zealand pack. That just looks like it can steamroll or anything. I bet if we put it in front of a brick wall, they'd demolish it. They'd go straight through.
I'm sure he could do. Do you totally agree with that description of the New Zealand pack, Ep?
Oh, definitely. They're big boys. But I think the only thing for New Zealand, that they haven't really been tested as such coming into the finals. I know Samoa did come back in the second half, but I think they're taking their foot off the throttle a bit there.
Now, we've had some player reaction regarding the games gone from week two. Let's get into Coach's Corner, shall we? Let's hear from Tim Sheens from Australia, Terry Masterson from the USA, and the legend that is David Fairley from the Cook Islands.
Well, again, I think we were rusty and we did some silly things, but defensively we were very good. So, you know, we forced, you know, we defended everything. They played very well. They completed every set in the first half, and we weren't that bad, but second half, I think they were well into the half before they dropped the ball. So, you know, they played well, they kicked well. Conditions were obviously very, very tough for both teams. But, you know, I was very happy with the way the team defended. We had to change game plan at the last, you know, coming into the game because of the conditions, and the guys reacted to it really well. We played nice and tight up the middle, kicked well. I thought our kicking game was really good. Our chasing game was really good again against their back three, which were obviously very dangerous, the two wingers and the fullback. And the fact that we kept them to no tries, and I don't think we looked like giving up a try, to be quite honest. Or maybe that one where he nearly got it down, I suppose. That was about the only chance that we gave them, so we turned them away there as well. If they complete like that next week, they'll give England a run for their money. I tell you now, if the conditions are any better, better than they were tonight. But, you know, in saying that, England played very well today too, watching their game. Cherry went well. He was a bit rusty, a couple of things didn't go quite his way. Same with Jonathan, it was a tough game for halfbacks, but nevertheless, in the big plays, both boys came through. Jonathan's goal kicking was phenomenal, just absolutely phenomenal. You put one from the sideline, went almost hit the halfway, but never outside of that, everything else was excellent. In conditions like that, you just can't beat that. But we're starting to get serious in this respect that we need to start coming up with the combinations that we're going to go through from there. We need to win the game first, and by the same token, we need to get everyone game time, which is why Cherry got games today, why Robbie's been getting games. There's been a bit of criticism at home about playing Robbie, but we need to make sure that our key playmakers are all getting game time. We can't go deep into the tournament and then find a possible problem and them not having played. So Cherry and Robbie both getting a bit of time each, and that's important, as are the other players in the team. So we'll pick a team this week with a view of starting to get into the quarterfinals, and then obviously then it starts to become sudden death. So we've just got to obviously pick our best side and start to work on those combinations.
Oh, I'm obviously disappointed.
I'm really proud. Again, I didn't know these guys. How long ago was that? 2 weeks?
Yeah, a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah. And what they've done in that time is they've just worked really hard for each other. And we've been given a really, really tough draw. We had the backup after 4 days, and so we had one captain's run yesterday, and we've got the same coming ahead. We've got 4 days break as well. So, and to come here with the Welsh, obviously a good team who had everything to play for. They were playing for their World Cup, and they threw everything at us. And defensively, I thought we were outstanding tonight. Obviously, a couple of blips at the end, but I can forgive that. I think we just clocked off. The game was won, and outstanding performance. The boys just keep defying belief, to be honest. So, we'll just keep our heads down, keep working hard, and we'll worry about the next game against Scotland. And we'll enjoy tonight, but we haven't got too much time to enjoy tonight. We've got to prepare for the next game, and we'll see where that takes us. They're playing for the right reasons. These guys aren't getting paid. They don't get an allowance either. So they're playing for the right reasons, and they're making me proud, and they're making their families and their teammates proud as well. The more we can do here, obviously, it'll raise awareness. Again, we got a few lines in the New York Times the other day after the first win, so maybe we get a paragraph this one. So it's a big city, and it's a big country. If we can get a small part of that market over there, it would be fantastic. And these guys are doing everything they can to make it bigger over there. We've created a pretty good atmosphere in camp as well, and the guys have bought in to the basic things that we've worked on. So it hasn't been one person here or there. It hasn't been me coming in. I've created an atmosphere where these guys enjoy themselves, and they're doing it at the moment. They're working really hard for each other, so we can't do too much more than what we're doing at the moment. So it's a bit scary that expectations might go up, but in the room we're just worried about our performance. If we can keep performing to the best of our ability and improving some of those guys, that's what it's all about. And we're not even talking about results. Again, there was one of our players, Craig Priestley, was massively misquoted last week after the game about taking on Australia and beating Australia. That wasn't said at all, so I'd like that retracted. We're not even looking that far ahead. We looked at today, and that's all we're worried about.
It was a great game of rugby league. I can't question our players' effort. They tried hard. Some key errors at some really important stages in the game, but we were there in the end to give ourselves a chance to get back in and win the game. But unfortunately, it didn't happen for us tonight. But I couldn't be prouder of the effort and the courage that our boys displayed. We had some injuries. We lost players early, so it was a good effort. Very pleased.
It'd be almost unfair to hang it on the bottom try, wouldn't it? Really,
that's not why we got beat. The game, writes its own story, and it's a collection of things throughout the game that happen. So to pin it on one thing, that's just how it ended up. But it's not Jordan's fault, that's for sure.
Have you spoken to him since the game?
Yeah.
How
is
he?
He's all right. He's at least disappointed. He reckons he would have kicked the goal too. So he's sort of okay. Fair enough. It was an improvement. And that's what you got to do. You got to improve every game, and we certainly did that. We weren't good enough tonight to win, but we got better. So we've got to get better again to beat Wales in Wales on Sunday. So recover. The boys can have a rest tomorrow, and I think Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and it's on again. Well, I fancy our chances against any team. You know, we're always in the fight. They're going to be hard to beat, but so are we. So we'll just see what happens. Chris Tarapo is a bit of an unsung hero for us. He's got a chance tonight. He's playing low grades for the Roosters at Newtown, and he's a good talent. And you know, he certainly put himself out there on display tonight. So well done to him. He deserved it.
I'm sure he did, but he mentioned that the short turnaround there. Just how difficult has it been for a lot of these teams with the short turnarounds?
I can't believe that they've sort of foisted this short turnaround on so many of these players and so many of these teams. They really have pitched this World Cup so that the teams like your Australia, New Zealand and England have all the benefits. Everybody else is just making up the numbers. I think it's a bit unfair that, you know, we're asking players to back up with just 3 or 4 days rest in between.
Certainly difficult, Hep, isn't it? I mean, we know about it in Super League, but it's even harder when you're playing yet another game a couple of days after your game in the weekend.
Yeah, your body hasn't even recovered from the game, really, and having short turnarounds, you don't get the chance to put in a proper training session, which is important to have your game plan set. So that's a setback for the team as well.
I mean, Terry mentioned there about captain's runs. Just give us an idea, because, you know, what happens in a captain's run then?
It's pretty much just a light run through. There's nothing too physical about it. It's just you run through what game plan you're going to get to and what players you're going to get at, and yeah, it's pretty much nothing too hard.
So it's almost like shadow rugby league, if you like.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. That's it.
Certainly interesting how they have put the fixtures together. And to be fair, though, a lot of the guys have just got on with the job, haven't they?
They have, yeah. I think that they've really covered themselves in glory, to be honest. And when you bear in mind that they do have this short turnaround, the performance of America that has been mentioned there, and the performance of Scotland, it's just there to be admired even more, isn't it, really?
Just looking ahead for England, by the way, in the build-up for the final group game, more disarray within the camp as Zach Hardacre withdraws.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure how much we can say about what's actually gone on there, other than his club have also decided that they're going to punish him. So we're probably best just leaving it there. But it's very disappointing when you pick a 24-man squad and all of a sudden, not because of injury or anything like that, you're down to 22 men. And it's putting a heck of a lot more pressure on the guys that are there still in camp, isn't it?
It certainly is. And to be fair, England have dealt with what's happened off the field rather professionally and just got on with the job.
They have, yeah, and you've got to put it behind you, to be honest, because, you know, if you've got hopes of lifting any silverware, you've got to galvanise together as a team. Now, you know, these type of incidents happening, they're either going to galvanise or rip a squad apart, really, aren't they?
Certainly are. And to be fair, I suppose as a player within a squad like that where you're in camp, it's difficult when things like that happen, isn't it?
Yeah, it definitely is. It is a setback, and it kind of takes you off track of what you're playing for and that for a while. But I think they would have all stuck together, and it's, like you said, it could bring them tighter. But having the extra numbers down, it's going to take a bit of a hit. It's a long tournament.
Let's just move away from the serious side of things. I've been impressed with some of the kits, by the way, but the piece of equipment that really caught my imagination, and one of the pairs, those Scotland tartan shorts, they're brilliant.
So we've got Adrian Mac Jackson, have we, in the studio at the minute?
When I see my friend Steve McCormack, I'm going to ask him for a pair. I'm going to wear them.
I can just imagine you on the beach somewhere.
They'll go with my pasty white skin.
Blackpool Beach, wearing them, yeah.
Do you think they go traditional, no undies?
I'm sure they do. You've seen the picture of the Scotland kit. Would you fancy wearing a pair of tartan shorts?
Oh, I don't mind watching the boys playing them, but I don't think I'd get a pair.
You do realise that if you put a pair of them shorts on, you're bound to get picked for Scotland as well at the next World Cup.
Just thinking that during your playing days, Hep, and obviously you're still playing, but when you get your kit and you get a pair of shorts, what's been the worst pair? You think, geez, am I going to wear these?
I think when I first started out, they're pretty short. The shorts were really short, especially training ones and that.
Butchie smuggler.
When I come over from New Zealand to Australia, the first kit bag I got, there's four pairs of budgie smugglers. I was like,
my word. Bright yellow as well with it.
Oh, I didn't know if it was a joke or not, but in Australia they get them out.
Certainly, the shorts aside, Scotland are really lighting this World Cup up, haven't they?
They are, yeah, and they've done a heck of a lot of development work as well, as have most of the countries, to be honest. I know certainly Tonga have been flying the flag over in Lee. There's been a couple of Tongan players that have turned out for that club over the last few years, so it's really good to see, and it's good to see players reconnecting the game with its roots, if you like, as well. And I think this is why it's been so successful in areas like Rochdale, where there's a massive Fijian community which has gone out and really backed the Fijians and made them feel right at home. And, you know, again, the fact that everybody's so together, and like you were saying, Het, where you're there and you know people who are involved in all these teams. There's just that real togetherness still, isn't there?
Yeah, it's real good. I was just... From that, I went to pick my daughter up from school today, and I seen the USA team coming out of another primary school, and they've got a game in a few days, and they've had the squad out visiting little primary schools and that. Take my hat off to them.
Fair play to everybody involved in the Rugby League World Cup. It's only going to get better as we get down to the business side of the World Cup trophy. Enjoy the tournament. Thank you very much, Fett, for joining us on the podcast. We'll see you soon.